All right, fifth anniversary of Live. This is one of first of four special shows. We have the first one on Sunday. This is the second one. We're going to take this again.
Yeah, because aren't you doing five shows, jackass?
Three, two, one. All right, Live is 5 years old this week, and this is special show number two. With me is Scott Henson, special guest.
Yeah, Bear in the house.
Gamer Tag Bear.
That's right.
You and I, I've had you on the show frequently.
Yeah, in fact, we have a lot of good memories from being on this show.
And it's glad to have you back.
Yeah, I'm glad. Hey, look, there is nothing I'm more passionate about than celebrating the success we've had over the last 5 years.
You were actually working on Xbox Live a year before it launched?
Actually, a year and a half before it launched. I came onto the Xbox Live project in the summer of 2001. So a lot of crazy decisions.
And one of your jobs was to work with some of the developers and convince them that, yeah, this is actually cool.
Yeah, actually, so my job was to go to the entire industry and say, hey, take the plunge. Take the leap of faith. We're going to build this amazing thing. By the way, when everything was still just a bunch of PowerPoints and ideas. And we hadn't even finalized a lot of the stakes in the ground.
And some people were still on 56K modems then.
In fact, that was one of the big debates back then was, hey, your big bet on broadband, are you guys crazy? Right, and we'd go out and talk to people, why don't you have? Why isn't there? What's with the Ethernet port? Where's your modem? Are you guys gonna do a modem?
Attachment
or something? And we're like, no, we're all in. Right.
So at no point when you were developing and planning Xbox Live, did you say we have to do dial up? That was not an option.
Well, of course there were debates about that, just like there were debates about the hard drive and how much our belief was in downloads and streaming content and that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, what ruled the decision-making was, can we really push the medium forward? Can we go challenge the assumptions? And can we actually create a new expectation in the marketplace? And you're not going to do that by saying, yeah, we're going to shackle ourselves to the existing convention. You just don't get anywhere that way.
Right, right. So it was a So let's back up a little bit. So you're 2000.
Let's back up.
A year before it launches, you're out there talking to publishers and developers. And what was some of the feedback? I mean, you talked a little bit about that, but were they all...
Well, they all started with, hey, where's Major Nelson?
Oh, come on. Come on. Come on.
No, okay, we're a little bit before the Major Nelson phase.
Right,
that
era.
Yeah,
that
in that era, right? The community? Yes, maybe we should think about community.
Right.
In that phase, it was very simple. And this will shock people. It's like, okay, the broadband bet.
Right.
You're going to run a service like HBO, right? You're betting on voice in every game. Really? Every single game? Matchmaking is going to be universal in every single game. You're going to have this idea, at the time we called it Quick Match and OptiMatch, and obviously we evolved that. All of those things, the friends list, everything. Intellectually, people could see the individual components.
Right.
But what would happen is no one at that time could really understand, when you integrate those things in a really powerful way, how that changed the rules. Right. Because all of those things existed. You had voice with Roger Wilco and that kind of stuff. You had a friends list with Instant Messenger. You had all these different components that existed on the PC, and the PC had shown these things. But nothing had been brought together in an integrated way. And certainly never, ever, 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 ever had it been done across a whole range of games, right? So it was really difficult for each one of the individual teams or the individual game teams to see how is this going to become the rising tide that lifts all boats, right? Because they've got their projects and schedules and, they have the reality of making a game. And, by the way, we're new to the console business then, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So not only are we new to the console business and coming in with this, we think that online's going to actually transform the entire console business. Okay, why don't you guys show that you can actually run a console business?
Right.
We hadn't even launched. So, it was a fascinating time to go out and have that kind of conversation, and a lot of leaps of faith were being pushed on. So,
what was the first game you played?
On Live?
What was your first experience on Live? Obviously, before in the beta, the beta.
Well, the very first experience was Triangle.
What?
We get the triangle up and running and hitting the SGs and talking to the service. And,
right.
Yeah.
What's the triangle?
Yeah, it's just a little test app, right?
Okay.
So nothing that anyone would ever see. But the very first game, to answer your question, that people would know about, and probably a lot of your listeners would love, was called Revolt. So we partnered.
people are going, no, Revolt, I love it.
Yeah, well, people that were on the beta back then, back in the day when we had the original beta, will probably remember Revolt and Fever and NFL.
What was Revolt for new people?
Yeah, so Revolt was a little RC racing.
So radio-controlled cars.
Radio-controlled cars, that's exactly right. Charming, cute, the perfect test game for the service, right? Really kind of proved out a lot of the concepts. Hey, do you want to talk while you're racing? Turns out it's pretty fun talking while you're racing.
Yeah.
Invites and inviting people into game and joining sessions and all that kind of stuff. We were able to prove out all of those early concepts with Revolt. And we got that up and running in late spring, early summer of 2002.
Right.
You know, our SDK had just, we just gotten it to a point where we could really do deep integration with the teams earlier, like late winter, early spring of 2002. And Revolt was the first one. We were really hands-on with it. We were working with the group that I ran for a while called ATG at the time.
Which was?
The Advanced Technology Group, right?
Right.
And they were writing a lot of the code. We had some guys that were actually, you know, porting everything from the PC over to Xbox to actually validate all this stuff. So that was the first one. I remember the first games we played with Japan and with Europe, right? It was like April or May of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my gosh, just the idea of talking cross-continent while you're playing the same game and it was just seamlessly integrated. Like all of those dreams and those PowerPoints turned into reality in that spring.
Right.
And it was just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be huge.
Right.
Right. You could just see it at that point. And then as we went through that summer, and we, you know, people probably remember we launched publicly in 2002 at E3. That's when we had Unreal Championship. That was our showcase title, which is kind of funny to think about in retrospect. Right? Given, right. I mean,
right.
Cause you know, you think, oh man, what's going to be the big title? Well, actually it was the big title was Live, and
right.
Live just was this huge catalyst for a whole bunch of games. And it turned out Ghost Recon ended up being the really big title.
Oh, it was.
And shocked everyone. And it actually proved out one of the fundamental things that we all believed, which was that co-op and playing through games together, magic, awesome. Like, just like having someone there on the virtual.
We
couch.
Need to do more of that.
Yeah, totally need to do more of that. And it's awesome to see that, you know, Halo, you know, that was one of the big discussions when Halo 2 launched in 2004. Like, you know, it was a really difficult cut for those guys to pull that out.
Right.
Because, I mean, that was the magic of Halo, is playing it through with your buddies on the couch, right?
Right.
Well, being able to do that on the big virtual couch, my brother lives in California, I have relatives in Texas,
right?
You know, being able to do that just rocks. And so I think Ghost Recon was, you know, one of those early surprises. The first retail game to ship was from Visual Concepts, and it was NFL 2K3 and shipped in August. Full retail title, actually shipped right during when we were doing the beta.
Right.
We had to make a lot of, you know, football seasons when football season is.
Right. You can't move that.
Can't move that, right, exactly. People probably remember NFL Fever, which shipped later. And had on our first big auto update, which actually enabled Live, came later in that year, right around, I think probably right at launch.
We call them title updates now.
Title updates. Sorry, I get
no. I'm just saying that's the old school term.
Yeah, get a little stuck in that.
So it's been you know, you work really closely with the developers, and so it's got to be pretty exciting for you to see some of the code that your team worked on brought to life.
It's unbelievably gratifying, right? When you go from vision to reality and then the scale, you know, we'd have these conversations back in 2001, and it's fun because I actually dug up a lot of those decks to kind of see how much of the vision did we deliver on. And in those decks, we talked about 10 million members.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in 2001, we talked about the fact that we were going to build from, you know, friends, integration and voice integration in games to where the system would actually start taking on some of that functionality. Xbox 360 wasn't even on the drawing board then, right? But we already had that notion where we could actually do a lot of that heavy lifting. Games on demand, Xbox Live Arcade,
right?
All of that was a part of that vision even way back then, you know. And way back then, come on, 5 years. 5 years isn't really that long.
Well, it's a long time in the consumer electronics and internet space.
Totally. And if you think about, you know, the last 5 years, how many releases have we had for Live? Probably 8. Plus, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the spring and fall rhythm that we've gotten into, I mean, we're on a pretty consistent, constant, you know, upgrade path here. And, you know, if you look at 2001, you just say, man, are we going to actually be able to do all this stuff? You go, 10 million members, games on demand, streaming content. Even then we talked about entertainment, right? Video,
right.
All that kind of, oh, come on, that's crazy. That's just crazy. And then, you know, you launch the thing and we're all down in L.A. and we're sitting there with, you know, all the celebrities and stuff, and there's kiosks everywhere, and we're sitting there just watching the numbers, right? And it was like, oh, my gosh, this thing might actually be really big. It might actually, you know, achieve the ambition that we had. It was to, back to your point, unbelievably gratifying. Going from PowerPoint to reality is a huge thrill.
And then so later on in 2002 it shipped, or 2002 it shipped.
Yeah, November, yep.
And then 2003.
And we rolled out initially to 6 countries. I think, what are we in now?
21?
Yeah, 25-ish, something like that, somewhere in that neighborhood. And, you know, 6 countries we staged at: U.S., Canada, U.K., Germany, France, and then Japan. And we staged that over the course of, you know, several months. Even then people thought that was super ambitious.
Right.
You know, 6 countries. And now, I mean, 6? Are you kidding? 6 is nothing.
Right.
25, and I'm sure, you know, we're going to scale.
What are some of the decisions from where you sit that decide whether we can go into a country or not? Because the Xbox 360 is available in far more countries than Live is.
Yeah, so I think you actually can rewind back to where we were 5 years ago, right? The decisions that actually went into that were, okay, what about broadband penetrations look like? What are the socioeconomic factors that fall into this? What is the price of the console? You know, right. There's a whole range of factors that go into that. At the end of the day, it's just, you know, a space and time issue. We have a universal belief that broadband is going to be pervasive throughout the world, right? Now, different countries are on different timescales. And certainly, the U.S. is actually quite behind, right? Asia, in many ways, is just completely
blowing everyone away. Well, that's why I love going over there. It's like they've got fiber running into everything.
Right, and you're just always connected, right?
Right.
Just always. And, you know, I think people in the West, you know, we'd go talk to them about the constantly connected community, and they'd go, well, what are you talking about, right? And so we'd try to bring in analogs to try to help, you know, sell that story. But in many ways, you know, Asia was leading this charge well before even we came on the scene. So you could just see it. Right, and I think all of that, to answer your question, just space and time issue, right? So you look at where you are at the right inflection point. Are the economics right? Is the government situation correct for you to bring a console into the marketplace? That sort of stuff.
So after we launched, we had Ghost Recon, of course, 2004, Halo 2 redefined, you know, with the party system. They redefined what the online experience was like.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we knew that you know, from the beginning, Halo was a phenomenon, right?
Right.
And what was interesting about Halo 2 coming in, that was the same year we announced the deal with EA.
That's right. Right?
And those were the two, like in 2004.
You worked on that deal.
Yeah, there was a lot of behind-the-scenes work going on there. And, yeah, a lot of conversations with the executives and studios at that time. And, you know, EA is an incredible business company, right? And they're in many ways like Microsoft, where they look at stuff and they say, okay, is this the right time? It, you know, did they actually achieve the success? And so you could tell in 2004 we were on the trajectory. And once those guys came to the table and we found the right partnership, you could tell the service was well on its way.
Right.
And then Halo 2 showed up, EA showed up, and it was like major inflection point. We were at probably roughly, what, 1.5 million members somewhere?
Yeah, because I joined the team in early, was it late 03, right before that happened.
Okay.
So I like to think that it wasn't really EA, it was me.
Right. Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. And in fact, I remember distinctly, and you'll have Ben on here, and he should talk about that too, but Ben and I talking about, you know, we should manage this like a community, right?
Right.
We should be thinking about this like we need someone that's just a rock star, awesome, go
right.
Mix up the pot with the community and really understands that deeply. Because we believe fundamentally that that's the juice
right.
Behind
what and it still is.
And actually, I think you brought more to the game than we thought could be brought.
Well,
so.
I do it because of you, because
yeah,
of your support.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And then then when we started planning, you were deeply involved with the Xbox 360 planning.
Yep, absolutely.
So obviously, it was like, wait a minute, Live has got to be like the core thing.
So that is what is flabbergasting is to look back over 5 years and think, man, we talked about, you know, this being deeply integrated into games. And that the games were going to have to do all the heavy lifting. And so we spent so much time on tools, technology, and everything with Xbox One to get things like the friends list and messaging and
right.
all that integrated, right? A lot of work went onto the game teams. In many ways, that set up the conversation perfectly for Xbox 360 because we realized, one, we wanted to have this really consistent experience for our gamers. At the end
right.
of the day, who do we serve? The people listening to this, right?
Right.
That's who we all serve. Including the game developers and the publishers, and our job is to delight the gamers. And so how are we going to delight gamers? Well, let's give them a consistent interface, and how do we delight the gamer, the publishers and the developers? Well, let's take the heavy lifting off their back, right?
Right.
And let's do that work. So we create the ultimate win-win.
Right.
In many ways, we had to inflict a little pain on the developers and publishers so that they realize what a win-win that is.
Right.
Because it's a little uncomfortable having something outside of your game experience, you know, sort of running. But you realize after you'd realized the vision of Xbox and established it and really built on it that actually the next logical step was to take that to a completely new level.
Some would say that it's not even – it needs to be even more consistent.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
So like when some games you go into and you're like, what's going on here?
Yep.
Or the UI is different.
Yep.
You know, I understand that games need to have they want the creative control. Totally agree with that. But there's a point where it gets a little crazy.
Well, and I think as we think about, you know, broadening to a much, much greater segment, like if the industry really believes that we're going to be on the same level with TV or movies or books or any of that kind of stuff as far as an entertainment medium, and we love to talk about that because there's
right.
lots and lots of dollars in the ecosystem. But from just an approachability perspective, if we're ever going to get there, you're going to have those kinds of sensibilities across games. It's going to be a very difficult transition for the industry to think about those kinds of things, just like it was difficult 5 years ago when we started talking about stuff like universal voice and identity in all games. So I agree. I think it's absolutely too hard. I think there's going to have to be a rally cry that creates that sort of unification. But it's a tough challenge because you're really pushing hard in the creative realm there, right? And where is that boundary between, you know, universal, you know, access for people and, hey, wait a minute, that's my game, man.
Let's talk about something, a feature that didn't go very well for Live. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I assume you're going to talk about voice matching.
Yes.
It's funny. You know, you and I didn't even talk about this. And,
right.
And you can, like, the one thing that we could always – so, you know, I remember – I have to talk just for a minute about this. So I remember going out and pitching the developers and publishers about what a great idea this was. You could be the robot. You
right.
Could be
Darth Vader.
Girl. And then you start realizing, wait, maybe a guy with a little – kid's voice, maybe not a great idea, or Darth Vader.
Right.
Complete. And the first thing that happened on the beta. Everyone would say, hey, dude, turn off voice masking. That sucks.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is awful. So you did the beta long enough. It didn't take us long, right? And we did the beta, and we're like, we're taking voice masking out.
Yeah, it's out of.
This may be the worst idea we thought was the greatest idea. I don't know what we were thinking. What were we thinking? Okay, chalk that one up to just complete stupidity, right? So, yeah, that was pretty. In fact, you know what we talked about back then that never happened? Voice packs. We were going to sell voice packs. Yeah.
Really?
So think of Marketplace today. Think of – just imagine for a second, if you will. Just close your eyes.
Yes.
Drift away and think about hundreds and hundreds of voice packs on Marketplace. How would that be? That'd be like
– So there would be the Scott Henson voice pack.
No, bad idea.
Bad idea.
Bad idea. But maybe the Major Nelson voice pack.
What? No.
Yeah. Now the is that the real Major Nelson?
Why do you think voice didn't catch on?
Voice masking?
Yeah.
Because – it's just like you and me talking right here. If I had, you know, a voice mask on, it would be the most distracting, annoying thing.
So should maybe
it's
we
social, should... right? You want to talk to people, you want to connect with people, and you don't want to do it, you know, like you're behind some, you know, crazy voice screen.
Right.
Silliness.
What were some of the other things that you learned that maybe didn't go so well, or that you had to tweak, or let me back it up. What are things that you weren't expecting all of a sudden? Wait a minute, this is huge.
So, you know, there were stuff as we went into our, you know, .1 and 2.0 release, which you probably remember because you were coming in then. And these were the releases that enabled things like Project Gotham Racing and that enabled Halo 2. As we went into those releases, we really started to have ideas about how we were going to continue to extend the functionality of the service, right? So people may or may not remember this, but of course we added the party matchmaking system infrastructure. We added things like messaging. I don't know if people remember that, but you could send
We used to not have voice messaging.
That's right. Or it was just in specific games where you could attach a voice message and then send it to the games. What we realized quickly, and this goes back to your question about Xbox 360 and integration, what we realized quickly is we had completely hamstrung ourselves in terms of innovation and being able to continually innovate.
Right.
And if we wanted it to actually get implemented, then we had to go basically write a bunch of new TCRs, which are title certification requirements, and shove them down the throat of the industry, which is awful, not good from a customer, you know, partner relations perspective. Because, again, we're trying to serve the gamer here and give them new functionality and give them new features. And what we realized, the biggest number one learning that we had is that we really had no agility or ability to continue to add on to our feature set. So, great, Halo 2 picked it up, but what about all the other games? Can you send and receive messages?
Everybody wants party match in every game. That's right. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a great request.
Right.
I mean, we had a lot of debates about the party matchmaking system because at the time it was this groundbreaking, we had never seen it system. We had these ideas about how matchmaking should work on the service. And Bungie came in and basically said, you know what? We think we have a much better idea. Okay, well, let's go enable it.
Right.
So I actually think this is a really interesting point because it's exactly like the question you just asked a second ago. You said, you know, shouldn't we just make, more common across more games and so I don't have to figure out the menu system and that kind of stuff. Agree. Matchmaking is one of those examples where people feel like that is an integral part to their game, right? When I say people, I mean the developers and publishers that are making the games. And so, you know, then you take that up a notch and you say party matchmaking is actually the thing that should be universal. Maybe it should be universal, right? I mean, does it work for every single game type? Does it work for just box-to-box games, right, where you're just playing with a friend in sports games? I don't know if party matchmaking is actually the right metaphor for sports games, right? Does it work for all arcade games? You know, if you're playing a board game or Carcassonne, that kind of stuff, does party-based matchmaking actually work in that? I don't know.
Yeah.
So these are the kinds of things. When you make a decision, you say, I want all games to be that way. Okay, well, take a look across the catalog and think, does this actually work for all games? And this is the difficult part. And now, should we make it really simple for games where it makes tons of sense and it actually is a party-based game? Yeah, absolutely. No question.
Do you think, talking about party base and gaming, do you think that, you mean, we all talk head to head is like, yeah, that's cool. We've done that. Do you think co-op's the new thing?
Well, yeah, of course.
So we talked about that earlier on.
Yeah, hands down. I mean, I've been.
Crackdown had it. Halo 3 has it.
That's right.
Gears had it.
Now, go back in history, though, and think about this. Our number one title in 2002 and 2003, Ghost Recon, had it. Our number one title from 2003 moving into 2004, Rainbow Six.
Right, but that was that was kind of a you and I take on the AI. It wasn't we go through the story.
Agreed.
It was
elements of the story. You go pick the levels.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. It was.
So
it was,
I think there's an evolution. You're absolutely right.
Right.
Just like Gears of War. Gears of War did this right. Gears of War did this exactly like we had imagined it years and years ago. Actually, better than we had imagined. The way you can just seamlessly take over the AI and then drop back out.
You jump in and out.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh, that is. That was another one of those, like the first time I did that. So the first time I did that, and I don't know if we did a podcast about this or not, but I was online and one of my friends was actually just getting Game Studio up and running, right? So he's just getting those Game Studio Express, right? You know, we had it was the same time. They basically released last
XNA December. Stuff.
Yeah.
This
XNA
is XNA stuff.
XNA stuff, right? Exactly. So he's off working on his part of the world and, you know, getting stuff going. And I'm over here in Gears of War and playing through the single player campaign. And I see that he's on. I'm like, oh, cool. So I send him a message. And he's like, yeah, okay, cool. I'll come play with you. Let me just finish up what I'm doing over here. And then all of a sudden, without me knowing anything, because I'm still playing through the campaign, all of a sudden I'm like, I hear in my voice or in my headset, hey, Scott. Yeah? Hey, it's Joe. Joe, what are you doing? Dude, I'm here. And I look over, and there one of the squad mates was Joe. Like, dude, this is awesome. Okay, you go left, I go right.
Right.
And the whole time he's off left and you can just hear, you know, yelling and screaming. I'm like, oh, what's going on with Joe? And I'm going to the right. And then we meet back up in the middle and we take on the big boss. And, you know, that was like 30, 45 minutes of just pure incredible fun. And then he had to drop back out and I just kept playing through.
You just kept going.
Campaign. That, to your question about the future, that is the future.
Right.
There is no question. That is such a magical, incredible moment. That changes the way you think about games, that changes your expectations, that shifts the fundamental conversation. And then, you know what I think the next part of that is? Then being able to share the moment. So what the Halo guys have done,
right?
What the Bungie team's done with their theater,
right?
And Forge, of course, as well.
Right.
That takes it up then to the next level. And I think that's going to be a fundamental shift as well. No question. Without question. We've talked about user-generated content forever. That is a big form of user-generated and shared content where you can take those experiences and share it with one another. Take pictures of it, share it with people in email, yada, yada, yada.
So we got to wrap it up in a few minutes, but I want to ask you.
Good thing, because I could just go on.
No. I got a bunch of guests coming on this week to celebrate the 5 years. And I want to make sure I got you on because you were there from the beginning. A lot of my guests were there from the beginning, but you kind of dealt on the developer side.
Yep.
What do you think are going to be some of the challenges over the next few years in terms of growing live?
I think, the number one thing is really embracing and understanding user-generated content and that development and how that affects games, right? I mean,
can I say it?
Sure.
Velocity Girl?
I'm not talking about making T-shirts.
Okay.
Or selling T-shirts.
Okay.
Although that's a fine dream. And you can talk to Jay about Velocity Girl.
Oh, yeah, right.
He was the guy on stage.
Yeah.
Right? Here, let's have a seat and talk about Velocity Girl. No, I mean specifically, like, look, start simple and look at the phenomenon of Counter-Strike, right? It's an easy thing for us to start with, right? Now take that and extrapolate between Counter-Strike and what's going on with Facebook, right? Yeah, exactly.
What?
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, what's going on with Facebook right now is you're seeing basically an infinite long tail of development and experiences that are coming at you from the community. The power of our platform is the community.
Right.
Right? And, you know, people always, they get confused between when we say user-generated content, oh, you mean Counter-Strike. Okay, sure.
That's part of it.
Go to the other extreme and look at Facebook. I actually think Facebook is a lot closer to what you're going to see happen with games and the long tail of experiences where people get to define everything from, you know what, I just want to race through here and share it with my friends. You know what, I just played this great game and I want to share the experience with my friends. You know what, I've got this great game idea. This is now back to the XNA stuff. I've got this great game idea and I want to be able to put it together and share it with my friends. And you're going to just see lots and lots of innovation coming out, just like you see in video, just like you see in music, just like you see in other entertainment medium. It's going to fundamentally transform our medium as well.
What? Behind you on my rack, I've got the PS3 and I've got the Wii under there. You see them?
Yeah, I do see them. Yeah, one's very black and one's very white.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Black. It's black and white.
Yeah.
What are, you know, we've got these guys. The Wii is, you know, a little darling of the industry right now. What's going to happen? You know, but it's not connected. It has no live component.
It's somewhat connected-ish.
Right.
Right, in a connected-ish kind of way. What's your question? What's going to happen to these platforms?
Well, yeah, just your opinion. The PlayStation has they're working on something. Who knows?
Well, look, we all made fundamental bets.
Right.
Right? PlayStation bet on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
We bet on the Waggle Wand. And the Wii remote, right? And
right.
My wife likes to call it
the Waggle Wand.
The Waggle Wand.
Okay.
My kids, right? Come on. Yeah. That's what they call it. Come on, Daddy, that's the Waggle Wand. And then we bet on online. We bet on the community,
right,
and the service. Those are three very different bets.
Very much so.
Right? I think we believe fundamentally. Look, what I said wasn't just like spin or marketing. Like in our core, in our soul, in our being, we believe that online is going to transform gaming.
Right.
Right? In a fundamental way. If we're right, I think people will look at those consoles and go, what are you guys doing? I mean,
right,
how are you connecting into the community? How are you going to transform gaming here,
right,
and not continue to play catch up on the console side? I think people are going to look back at consoles and go, yeah, that was the dinosaur model. Things have just completely and utterly changed, right? We created the democratization of games through online. And that is a big shift. That's a fundamental shift.
You realize that may be the headline on Kotaku.
The democratization.
Scott Henson says, yeah. That may be the soundbite.
All right, bring it on. Let's see it.
So, all right, that's cool. So, it's. I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you coming by and talking to me about this. You want to talk anything about our experience in Leipzig?
You know, so there. I knew this was going to probably come up, and my voice got remixed in about 20 different ways.
Oh, here we go.
Which was, you know, I remember going up to your room and doing the podcast and say, well, there's two SKUs, and then the next thing I remember is like literally, you know, hours later it being on the internet, and I'd say, well, there's two SKUs, and then no.
Right.
Now, as we're moving into the life cycle, I think people are starting to see what our long-term plan and our long-term thinking was. You know, I did a bunch of reading and views through what's going on with Xbox 360 Arcade. A lot of the people that are listening to this, probably not candidates for our low-end.
So the Xbox 360 Arcade that launched a couple weeks ago.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you're starting to see now kind of like our longer-term thinking and how we specifically believe, and we've said this over and over again. Yeah, we say choice, 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 choice. We believe it. Right? We believe that you should have choice and not one size fits all. Right? And sure, there's going to be criticism about that. And sure, people are going to push back on that. But that's what's driving us. And you're going to see us do more of that. And there's going to be a set of customers that are much more price sensitive. They don't care about a hard drive. Then they just care about simple pick up and play games.
Right.
And we're going to give them a great experience.
So Gamertag Bear, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, baby.
Can I ask you what you're playing now?
Okay. So what am I playing right now? You know what? With the kids, a lot of party animals right now.
Yeah, you're yep, being most excellent, aren't you?
Yes, I. You know what? I gotta say they're pretty. I like how quick the achievements come with party animals.
Yeah, I do too. My wife and I played
Fast and Furious.
My wife and I played. She did quite well.
Yeah, did she?
Yeah,
did she hold in there with you?
Yeah, she was great. She loved it.
Yeah,
you know, she really loved though.
What's that?
Seen it.
I know, totally.
Yeah.
And those are the two games now that my wife and kids are asking me to play. Where normally it'd be like, hey, honey, you want to come play? Hey, kids, you want to come play? I'm telling you, every single night I go home now. Hey, can we play Seen It? Hey, can we play Party Animals?
Your kids are playing Seen It?
No, well, all right. The Seen It's the wife part. You're right,
right, right.
Fair point.
Okay. Good, I just want to make sure I understand.
But no, seriously, I think those are great steps.
What about that guy?
Guitar Hero?
Guitar Hero 3,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? My kids love that. It's still a little too complicated for them.
Right.
And my wife is like, great fun to watch. Little too nimble on the fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
But oh my gosh, are you kidding? A wireless guitar? We can do the rock squats in the living room now?
Is that what you're doing?
Well, you know, it's a little Jack Black, a little Tenacious D.
All right, that's it. We're going to wrap it up now. So, Scott Henson, I appreciate you coming by and celebrating the 5th anniversary.
High five!
High five, baby. 5th anniversary of Live. And we'll have you on again maybe in a few months.
Bring it on.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right, man.